we can't put everything across the finish line at the same moment.
Governor Walker talks about revenue. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, June 9th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, a new president for the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation.
You know, to get talent, you have to have a competitive salary.
Those stories tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The State Gasline Corporation has a new president 5 months after the ouster of its previous leadership, and he will start with a base salary of over $500,000, making him Alaska's highest paid state employee. Keith Meyer, a former president of Cheniere LNG in Texas, was approved by the board of the state-owned Alaska Gasline Development Corporation Thursday morning. Meyer's annual salary is set at $550,000 with an optional annual bonus of up to $200,000. It's a significant increase over his predecessor, Dan Fauske, who made about $367,000 when he resigned last winter. As president, Meyer will oversee the state's share of the massive Alaska LNG project to build a natural gas pipeline from the North Slope. Board Chair Dave Cruz says the state has to pay Meyer something close to what his counterparts are making at the state's three partners in the project, ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips.
You know, to get talent, you have to have a competitive salary. And like I said, we're on the low side of what those guys are getting compensated, you know, for like a responsibility.
According to a press release, Meyer is a 35-year veteran of the energy industry. Cruz says the board was impressed with his role in overseeing the development of the Sabine Pass liquefied natural gas terminal in Louisiana. It's the largest in North America. Meyer is moving from Texas to take the position and will start work June 15th. Alaska Governor Bill Walker started this year calling for three things to solve the state's budget crisis: restructuring the permanent fund, cutting subsidies for oil and gas companies, and instituting taxes, including an income tax. Two of those planks moved forward this week. The full legislature passed an oil tax bill, and the Senate passed a permanent fund bill, which would cut dividends in half. That cut would be felt most acutely by low-income Alaskans. But the legislature has so far balked at the idea of an income tax, which would have a bigger impact on higher-income Alaskans. APRN's Rachel Waldholt sat down with the governor to get his take on the current situation. She started by asking about the dividend cuts.
Is that fair? Are we balancing the budget on the backs of poor Alaskans?
Well, we're taking each step as we can. And you know, we can't put everything across the finish line at the same moment. And so the reason that we had all the pieces we had is to have exactly that, have that balance, to make it as balanced as possible. You know, you have to start off with one piece, and that's the first piece that came across.
What about the impact on rural Alaska of PFD cuts? Are you worried about that?
Of course I am. Every decision that's made in Juneau impact different areas differently. There's no question about that. So this impact on rural Alaska will be disproportionate. There's no question. The cost of everything in rural Alaska is higher. So you know, the amount of the dividend is about the average what we've received since the dividend was in place. It wasn't that many years ago. A few years ago, the dividend was $800. So, you know, we'd like it to be as high as possible, but we just can't continue to fund government out of the savings account.
Do you believe it will pass the House, that a similar bill will pass the House?
I do. I do, because it has to. You know, we just don't have the alternative of there's not a better option out there. So, you know, if there was one, I would certainly hope somebody would have brought it to our attention at this point. So I believe it will pass because it has to.
What about the oil and gas tax credit bill? This was another key plank of your plan. This was a key part of sort of reining in state spending, and the legislature passed a version that would save significantly less money than what you proposed. Are you satisfied with that? Will you sign that bill?
You know, I haven't seen the bill itself. I'm familiar with what it says, but it has to go through a legal review, so I will withhold what I'll do with that bill until I see it. You know, they did a lot of good work. I mean, they didn't go as far as I would like to have gone, but I do not diminish at all what they did do. But I think there's more that can be done. I think they know that as well. I think they. But the question is, you know, when is that going to get done? So we'll, that's all part of the mix at this point.
This legislature hasn't always been incredibly receptive to some of your ideas. And I'm wondering, are you planning to campaign for a different legislature next year? Are you going to be campaigning for candidates to get a legislature that maybe is more aligned with your vision for going forward?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I'm campaigning for the fiscal package. And that's my sole focus is getting the fiscal package, as much of that across the finish line this year as we possibly can. So we're not in the same situation next year and the next year and the next year. So that's the campaign I'm focused on right now. And we're in, you know, special session, and hopefully we can get that done yet this special session.
Do you anticipate another special session after this one?
If needed, I will call it. If we don't get enough done, if we don't end up with the legislation to fix Alaska, at least at the larger pieces, then I would certainly call another one.
That's Alaska Governor Bill Walker speaking with APRN's Rachel Waldholtz this afternoon. Alaska regulators have approved the state's first license for a legal marijuana business. Approval of the application by CanTest LLC of Anchorage, a marijuana testing facility, was met by applause and cheers during the Marijuana Control Board meeting in Anchorage. The approval is subject to the completion of local processes. The application was among 30 up for consideration by the board and the first taken up. The board hasn't been able to have national criminal history background checks run. They're waiting to see whether a bill passed by the legislature authorizing those checks will be signed into law. Despite that, the board decided to move ahead with considering applications in the meantime. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Douglas celebrates the canoe flotilla. That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by GCI, an Alaska-born and raised company connecting Alaskans from the Aleutian to the Arctic, from the North Slope to Southeast, and to the rest of the world. With more than 2,000 employees statewide, a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media. And by the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
An amateur chef from Juneau has won a White House-sponsored recipe competition, and he's just 9 years old. Denali Shivens will attend a kids' state dinner in July, hosted by First Lady Michelle Obama. Denali spoke to APRN's Liz Ruskin today and told her he's been cooking since he was a toddler.
His winning entry is a whole grain crepe filled with sour cream, red lettuce, and pan-cooked halibut, topped with a tart blueberry sauce. He calls it Wrapped Alaska, Denali style. What, you were expecting grilled cheese? Not from Denali Shivens.
My dream job is to be a chef of a successful restaurant.
His original vision for this recipe called for salmon, but the store had fresh halibut. Denali went with it.
I was aiming for it to be kind of like nice, like homey, because it's supposed to be a school lunch challenge, and at school, you're always missing home, so kind of homey, like, so you wouldn't be homesick.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Surely he had a parent's help.
You know, I tried to help with the recipe. I gave lots of input, and he wouldn't listen to anything I had to say.
Melani Shivens says she and her husband Sonder don't know where this interest in cooking originated, but it's been with their son since at least age 2. Denali says ideas just come to him, so he tries them out.
I have a friend named Nancy, and she helps me. Nancy is a bit older than me. She's a grown-up.
He means Nancy Hemingway, a retired state worker who likes to cook and bake. For a present, Denali's aunt gave the boy cooking lessons with her. They started when he was 8, making Napoleons, tiramisu, and later pork loin and zucchini-wrapped salmon. Hemingway says Denali brings focus, curiosity, and style to his work.
I've never seen anything like it.
Denali, she says, once found ingredients in her fridge and made what he called a pie within a pie. One time he came late. Hemingway recalls he told her the birds were singing so much he had to walk slowly to listen.
I initially thought it was going to be a lot of work, which it was, to give lessons, but it was the most fun thing I've ever done in my life.
Denali and his mom will fly to Washington for the kids' state dinner. Denali is psyched to go to the White House.
I definitely want to shake hands with the president. And I don't even know what's going to happen there, so it's really just up to destiny now.
Destiny, it would seem, is clearing a path to a kitchen for Denali Shivens. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The U.S. Forest Service is asking for public comment on a proposed timber sale on Wrangell Island. The project could result in the harvest of 65 million board feet of old-growth timber from over 5,000 acres. KSTK's Aaron Bolton has the story.
The U.S. Forest Service released 5 alternatives in their draft environmental impact statement for the Wrangell Island project on June 2nd. Its preferred alternative would allow 2/3 of the acreage to be selectively harvested and 1/3 clear-cut, producing about 65 million board feet. That's down 8 million board feet from the last time the Forest Service sought public comment on the idea in the fall of 2015. Wrangell District Ranger Bob Dalrymple says the harvest would take place over 3 to 5 years.
It's wide open to the public right now. Depending on the results of that public comment, we'll have to decide at that point whether we would need to do additional alternatives or not and put out another draft, or we would just move to the final.
The Forest Service has been working on the project for over 5 years. With the impact statement in the 45-day public comment period, the public can hash out what they would like to see. The 5 alternatives range from about 43 million board feet to 65 million, or no timber sale at all. Board member of the Alaska Forest Association, George Woodbury, says he's disappointed with the size of the harvest.
Without volume, you don't have the raw material to run the operations. You're out of luck. So it's very critical to take hard looks at how you can get the volume out and put out sales that are economic.
Woodbury says he's concerned about the lack of timber sales in Southeast, leading to more mills closing their doors.
Well, there's been a huge shrinkage of the industry because of the lack of timber, and the objective that the association has had is to try to restore some of those jobs and create the wealth that those mills produced and help the economy of both Wrangell and the other towns in the Southeast.
Dalrymple says the low volume is partially because Alaska is no longer exempt from the roadless rule, a Forest Service ban on logging and road building on millions of acres of national forest. He says the Forest Service also wanted to relax some of the Tongass Forest Plan's environmental protections to boost the volume of the proposed harvest.
That got really complicated in the sense that the Forest Plan itself is now under amendment. So we then went back and basically all of the alternatives right now stay completely within the existing Forest Plan. There's no reduction or relaxing of any environmental protection measures that are provided by the Forest Plan now.
Some consider those environmental protections too mild. Buck Lindenkugel is an attorney for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, or SEAC. He says they are unhappy with the volume of the proposal.
Instead of cutting the rest of the old growth that supports a whole variety of uses on Wrangell Island, the Forest Service ought to look at ways of integrating stewardship, restoration activities, and supplying timber off the existing road system to the small mills in the area.
Lyndon Kugel thinks Southeast should no longer rely on the timber industry as an economic driver. The proposed alternatives could build up to 17 miles of new national forest roads, some of which will stay open to the public, and about 15 miles of temporary roads. Wrangell District Ranger Dalrymple says the earliest timber sale would be mid to late summer 2017. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Last month, Great Pacific Seafoods filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. The processing company shut down its plants in Anchorage, Kenai, and Whittier, blaming a drop in roe prices and rising costs for its financial woes. As Alaska Public Media's Graylin Brasher reports, the tiny village of Whittier on Prince William Sound is keenly feeling the loss of a major employer.
It's a sunny day in early June in Whittier, and it's quiet. The Great Pacific Seafoods processing plant, where normally about 100 seasonal workers would be cleaning fish, is silent and empty. Next door at the Anchor Inn, bartender Bonnie Cox is on a cigarette break.
It's affected the whole town. Out of the blue, they came in and said they were shutting it down, pulling everybody out. So everybody's scrambling, trying to find jobs now, and it's nothing to do because we just don't have the people coming in.
Great Pacific's bankruptcy announcement took a lot of people here by surprise. In this town of about 200, where nearly everyone lives together in the 14-story Begich Towers condo building, the bodies and business that Great Pacific brought in were critical to the local economy.
Yeah, man, I live down in Southern California.
Over at the Whittier Harbor store, owner R.C. Collin is making peanut butter sandwiches with his daughter Chelsea before heading out to unload fish for a different supplier at the dock. He said there's no question the Great Pacific departure will hurt his bottom line.
100-plus people that worked at the plant used hotels and rooms and bought liquor and bought food and services and spent money every day. It's going to be a big bite for us.
I'm a little heartbroken.
Whittier Mayor Daniel Blair says he worries about the shutdown driving more people out of this tiny, isolated town.
It's like having a great neighbor leave. You know, they were part of the fabric of Whittier. We're a small community. I don't want to lose anybody.
Some will have no choice but to go. Great Pacific had regular contracts with many tender boats that call Whittier home base during summers of running fish and ice back and forth between the dock and fishing boats. Robert Johnson is one of those tendermen.
Oh, it's a rough hardship. I mean, if I had known at Christmas or earlier in the winter, I could have went out and scored a really nice contract. But they kind of had us dangling on a stream at the last hope.
Johnson says he did land another contract with Icicle Seafoods, but it's not ideal.
It's only a 50-day contract, but hopefully it'll keep the boat in my name in the house. So I'll either be delivering in Seward or at Sawmill, which is Igigik Village.
So that means you won't be doing any business out of Whittier?
No, I won't be. Once I leave here, I won't be running in here unless I break down and need something out of my storage containers.
Down at the dock, the Collins are using a wide tube to suck chum salmon out of the holding tank of a tender boat working for Copper River Seafoods. Matthew Mendoza works on the boat. He said he knows of three other tender crews who lost contracts when Great Pacific shut down.
I was sitting in the bar and they came right in. It's like, we don't have a job. They already had their boat ready and everything. They were just waiting for the first opener. And then they got a call. It kind of makes you think like, man, like this could happen to anyone.
People here know fishing is an industry of ups and downs. Even as the bankruptcy court oversees liquidation of Great Pacific's assets, including three condos in the towers and the processing plant. Residents say they're hoping another company will swoop in and things will pick up again. But Mendoza says right now, everyone's feeling the pain.
In one way or another, every person here in towns like these rely on the fishing on every company.
We in the fish?
In Whittier, I'm Graylin Brashear.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
The Resource Basket is a training and technical assistance center helping rural communities support healthy, resilient, and culturally connected youth. Tribes and youth-serving organizations can request support, explore resources, and find opportunities at resourcebasket.org or call the team directly at 1-800-478-7227, extension 7396. This message sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
A man found bleeding with multiple wounds on Wednesday night on the outskirts of Anchorage could have been the victim of a bear attack. Anchorage police received a call stating a man was barely responsive and may have been stabbed. Police and medics responded and took him to a hospital. He's in critical condition. After further investigating and working with medical staff at the hospital, police determined that the man was likely attacked by a bear. They have notified Fish and Game about the incident, but they have not been able to interview the victim yet. Department of Fish and Game spokesperson Ken Marsh says someone reported seeing a small black bear wandering Thursday in the same vicinity as the attack. He says agency biologists quickly found the animal and fatally shot it with a 12-gauge shotgun after the bear showed no fear of humans and stood up when it got close to the responders. Marsh cautions it hasn't been determined if the bear attacked anyone. The arrival of the One People Canoe Society yesterday marks an unofficial kickoff to this year's Southeast Alaska Native Celebration. While the flotilla steadied itself for the last leg of the journey, a crowd of over 300 people clustered at the shores of Douglas Harbor. KCAW's Emily Kwong reports.
At Celebration, waiting has a sound of drums, of voices raised in songs of welcome. The crowd is scanning the horizon, and one grandmother, Marie Johnson, is looking extra closely for the tip of a red canoe carrying her grandson. His name is Rory Earl Bennett.
And he's 10 years old, and he decided to do this with his grandfather.
His grandfather, Bill Bennett, invited Rory to accompany him on the Angoon to Douglas portion of the journey. Johnson said she was washing dishes when her grandson broke the news.
He talked about it, but I never knew if he was serious, you know, talking about it. And he finally came to me and told me, Grandma, you better start making my tunic. I said, oh, you're going to dance. He said, I'm going to ride the canoe. I said, oh, my God. And he made his own paddle.
Rory made his paddle at a workshop with Wayne Price, a Tlingit master carver.
And he put his grandfather's crescent on there, killer whale. I said, how did you know? And he said, I just knew.
Johnson made Rory's tunic in 2 weeks using felt and abalone shells. She tells me there's a beaded eagle on the front and a killer whale on the back, family crest.
We didn't even measure it. It fit him perfect. It was just like it happened. That's why I figured this was his year.
I mean, he'd have never asked you to do something like this before?
No. It was kind of a shock to me.
The paddle, organized by the One People Canoe Society, has only grown bigger over the past decade. Waiting to greet the flotilla was Paul Marks, council member with the Douglas Indian Association. Since the land used to be owned by the Douglas Indian Village, his permission is key.
Well, the importance is making sure you do the right things and say the right things. If you don't, it could cause misfortune. And some of the things that the younger people do because of enthusiasm, they want to be culturally orientated, but a lot of times they don't know really what to do or say.
So elders like Marks are more than leaders, they're teachers, demonstrating at the shore's edge how to arrive and how to receive. The crowd cries out. The first canoe has been spotted rounding the breakwater. There are 10 canoes total, from Ketchikan, Sitka, Cake, Angoon, Hoona, and Yakutat, two designated for war veterans. Each one has a safety boat. Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott joined for the final stretch to Douglas. All told, there's over 100 people aboard in regalia, paddles pointed towards the sky, facing us. They raft up, and at the edge of the water, Marks joins Fran Houston, representing the Aquan people.
Welcome!
to Auk Country. We are so happy that you made it here safely.
Anyakusane! Atlanganachisha! Atlanganachisha!
The exchange is one of respect, welcome, and thanks. The shores are pretty squishy with mud. I make my way over to Marie Johnson, who was just taking pictures of her grandson on her cell phone.
That's I'm okay. So proud of him.
Yeah. How'd you feel when you saw him going around the corner and you saw him?
Oh my God. It was just like seeing my grandfather all over again.
Johnson's grandfather was the chief of CAKE, Tommy Jackson. Joined by family, we wander over to the harbor ramp.
Oh, there he is.
And spot Rory. He's totally adorable, with green braces on his top teeth.
I'm feeling kind of tired because I've been paddling a lot.
Rory tells me he was in a boat accident once, but now feels safe traveling by canoe. His top snacks on the trip? Chex Mix, jerky, and candy. And the journey in three words? Sleepy, hardworking, and fun. How has this experience changed how you see who you are and your culture?
I feel that my ancestors felt tired a lot and everything. And I bet they got used to it, though, because they had to paddle almost every day to catch fish and salmon.
For someone who just stepped into the shoes of his ancestors, Rory is pretty matter-of-fact about what he's learned. I ask him, how did they push through journeys like this? How did you push through? And with a shrug, he says, just keep going, take little breaks, and keep going. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Emily Kwong.
And finally tonight, a correction. A story on Tuesday misidentified Senator Liesl McGuire as the sponsor of a bill restructuring permanent fund earnings. McGuire backed key provisions that were added to the bill and led support for it during the floor debate, but was not the sponsor. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Emily Kwong in Juneau, Aaron Bolton in Wrangell, Rachel Waldholtz and Graylin Brashear in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Our producer is Ellen Lockyer. Our web editor is Wesley Early. And I'm Ann Hillman. Have a great night.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. With a rich curriculum from art to advanced engineering, over 10,000 alumni strong, 90% of their students go on to a 4-year college or other post-secondary education. Explore your talents and develop your dreams at Mount Edgecombe High School. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.